Now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Ronan Higgins and Peter Onk, founders of TV AdSync. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Aidan?
Hey. So welcome to the show, guys. We'll jump straight into it. So your story, we met actually just when you guys started.
That's right.
And it's a great product and it's evolved massively. We're going to steer clear of the word pivot, we promised it. But it's evolved massively.
Yeah.
And it's become a product that you've really stumbled upon from the work you started out with.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear how it happened.
Sure. I mean, I think when we first met was 2 years ago, I think it was, and we were pitching around our basic product, which was and still is based around live TV ad airing information. So we were able to detect when TV ads air and then use that information to trigger short bursts of online advertising. Basic idea is that people were sitting at home watching TV. They had their phones or smartphones in their hands. TV show would cut to ads, the first ad would come up, and then they'd jump on their phone. And if you could just get the same advertiser onto the phone at that moment in time, the power of the TV ad would influence people to click on the digital ad on their smartphone or tablet or even laptop. A lot of people use laptops while they're watching TV. And it was, you know, it's a great concept. And we tested it out and we got some support from some of the ad agencies here in Dublin to run a control study. And we're able to prove that there was a statistically valid uplift in clicks on ads as a result of doing them within a short window of time from the TV ad. And that was great. That's what we pitched to, I think, a couple of years ago. But as we started to expand out of Ireland and look into other markets, especially the US market, we recognized that the model might not adapt to other markets, especially the US. We were over in New York last April, I think it was April. Yeah, April. Yeah. And one of the agencies basically said, guys, we can see how this works in Europe, but it's not going to work here because the TV audience is spread across a far greater number of channels. And they were right. You know, they were absolutely right.
You might have to explain that the probability of finding somebody in front of the TV watching their smartphone at the same time is quite likely when you have three main channels. But in the US, you have 300 channels. So the likelihood drops down to single-digit percentages of being able to reach the same person.
So scale and fragmentation.
Yeah. Which affects the probabilities of a person being delivered a digital ad actually being tuned to the right channel at the right time.
Yeah.
European markets are good because each market tends to have a dominant national channels. So Ireland especially has RT1, RT2 and TV3, which would command almost 50% of primetime ratings. So you know that if a TV ad airs on RT1 at 8:30 p.m., that 20% of the population have actually been exposed to that ad. And that means 20% of the people who are on their phone, if you give them the same ad on their phone or something relevant to the ad, 20% are actually relevant to the cross-screen experience. Whereas in the States, if you're watching even the primetime highest rating show, you might get a 7% rating. So the statistics just aren't as solid. And for most TV audiences in the US, it's like a 1-2% rating, 1-2 rating. So the model doesn't make sense. What's the point in buying kabillions of impressions across the whole of the US if you don't have people actually watching the show you're trying to sync against?
Yeah, and it's interesting because on the work involved, I mean, that was no mean task taken on. The kind of setup you had to do, because you had to link into the ad serving networks that the agencies would use, because the publisher may use a different one from the agency, you might use a third party one to measure what the publisher is doing.
Yeah.
And to synchronize that is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like, and you have to know then the ad times, the scheduled times as well. So you need to link into another one. And I suppose it's a kind of a pulling together of all those different platforms that is the product, or was the product.
Yeah, it was definitely technical.
Yeah, it goes actually a step deeper than that. Yes, we did kind of put things together in a very sort of improvised manner. So you need broadcast monitoring, you need to see what's happening on live TV. So we installed servers and put software on them to recognize what is happening in live TV. We started using a demand-side platform to buy ads that were triggered.
What's
by...
What's a demand-side platform,
Peter? Oh, sorry, yeah, demand-side platform.
Jargon.
Enables
the wrong sound effect. out.
This is a three-letter acronym, free zone.
Yeah, we get extra bonus points for throwing in
DSP. Throw that in there. I know what it means.
Sorry, I'll explain. Advertisers can buy advertising in real time for online, for mobile devices, for tablets, and one would use a DSP for that. So configure a campaign to target males between the age of 25 and 45 for, let's say, a Gillette ad. And a campaign will be configured to start on the Monday, or the first Monday of a month, and run for a month. And we would kind of do that slightly differently. We configured campaigns to not be running, but only run when a TV ad appeared. So it was just kind of changing the idea of when an ad would appear on a smartphone or a tablet. And at the same time, some competitors started popping up in Germany and in France, and they raised bucket loads of money to roll out across their home market. And their home market, obviously, is 80 million people in the case of Germany, and Ireland is 4 million people. So we didn't have the scale in our home markets, so basically needed to find a way to do it better, which when we went to the US, we did.
Yeah, pretty much. It took a long time to really work out how we would improve the product. But if it was complex, bringing the publishers and the demand-side platforms and the advertising components of the ad tech stack together in combination with broadcast monitoring technology, it suddenly got very complex trying to do something more sophisticated in the US. And we spent about a half a year researching, would it be possible to source or acquire data on a household level that would tell us when a specific household had been exposed to a specific TV commercial? And it's something you might think is kind of obvious if you've grown up in the internet generation, where when you go onto YouTube on your laptop, you know that YouTube knows that you have been exposed to a specific piece of content. But in the broadcast industry, that really hasn't existed. There hasn't been a back channel on broadcast. When the broadcaster broadcasts an ad for Ford, they know it's going out to millions of homes, but they don't know which homes. So we were looking for a way to get that kind of data. And we started off by talking to the cable providers, cable operators, or MVPDs, to get your four-letter acronym in there.
Ka-ching.
We were looking at set-top boxes. Was there a way that a set-top box might be able to reveal in real time that a specific household had been exposed to a specific commercial? And we knew that set-top boxes had some legacy middleware or technology on them for interactive TV services, the red button stuff you get on Sky in the UK. And in the US, a lot of the cable providers had interactive services. And the more we researched, the more we just couldn't work out, are these guys capable of sending any signal back up their pipes to some central place, or even to us directly, that we'd be able to sort of recognize that a TV commercial exposure moment happened? And then, more through fortuitousness than anything else, an old coworker of Peter's happened to have joined a slightly obscure company in San Francisco who pitched themselves as a smart TV interactivity content recognition platform.
Okay.
And for months, we were sort of sitting there looking at the website going, I'm not too sure what they do, to be honest. And then one day the penny dropped and we said, actually, hold on, these guys must be using their recognition technology in the television set to recognize when a piece of content hits the glass. And Peter reached out to his old coworker and said, listen, what are you working on? He said, this is what we're working on.
Yeah. So it turns out that they had built technology that sits in the TV and samples the screen every few seconds to work out what something is, and therefore creating a stream in real time of what a TV is showing on the glass.
So a visual recognition almost, wow.
Yeah.
So we kind of just explored how we could use that, and it turns out that they were building a large infrastructure to work with a number of TV manufacturers that would license their technology to create a real-time stream of what each household is exposed to in real time. So we said, well, that's all fantastic, but what we need to know is when a TV spot airs. Because when you go into content, it's a little bit tricky if you start matching households' data with what somebody is watching. Some people don't want the general public to know that they might be watching something
on telly. So when you say content, you mean programming?
Programming.
The actual show.
And there are different types of programming that people might be nervous about sharing their viewing habits of.
Even though it's completely anonymous, remember that.
Yes, of course. But what we basically try to work out with them is, can we learn in real time when an ad from one of our clients appears on a TV? And it turns out that that was one of the use cases that they had thought of initially, but never really explored. So we kind of built that relationship over time. And about 6 months into the relationship, we heard a rumor that they were being acquired by the TV manufacturer. And this is, at the time, the number two selling TV brand in the US. So wow. All of a sudden we were talking to this obscure company day one, and day two we're talking to this large TV multinational. So it was kind of ridiculously fortuitous, serendipitous,
that's,
if you will.
That's because it's when you think about getting closer and closer to the distribution pipe, people, yeah. Like, I mean, that's where the medium or the gold is. When you think about Facebook, we're publishing, etc. And it's like, we own distribution, we own the customer relationship, yeah. Essentially. Yeah. And the TVs getting into that just totally makes sense, because people talk about the future of, you know, smarter cars. And, you know, in that world of the smart car, who owns the radio in the car?
Yeah.
The car manufacturer.
Yeah.
The car manufacturer could get into serving their own ads to their own network, especially if you get to driverless cars or autonomous cars when people are buying less cars, and your Halo and your Ubers are driven by AI. Why do you need a car? Do you know what I mean? So it just becomes an on-demand platform.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to replace that revenue stream somewhere. So it's something that totally resonates with me, Peter, is that mindset of getting closer to the customer or a new revenue stream to replace a defunct one.
Well, talking about revenue stream, what had actually gone on with this company? Well, the original company was called Kognitiv. They had the core intellectual property around visual recognition on the glass of the TV set. They got acquired by Vizio Televisions, which was at the time number two. I think they're number one in sales in the US now. And Vizio had been a discount, or has been a discount TV vendor. So they're in Costco and Kmart and Walmart and all the big box retailers. But their business is a very thin margin business. I mean, they think they get a 2% margin out of each TV they sell. So if you're selling a $400 TV, not much actually being made per sale. But it's, at the same time, they're still a $2 billion company in terms of actual scale per year. But they, very soon after they acquired the company that we'd been talking to, they announced that they were going to do an IPO, or they wanted to do an IPO. And their S1 filing revealed that their whole vision for the future and their whole purpose for doing an IPO was that they recognized that there really wasn't that much money to be made in selling TVs, but there's money to be made in having an ongoing revenue stream from a television as a result of the data that it can generate about viewing patterns, viewing propensities, householders, different kind of bits and bytes that you can pull out of it. But in order to do that, the TV had to know what it was actually presenting. And if you think about it, historically, TVs have been pretty dumb. Even smart TVs have actually been pretty dumb. They actually just don't know what they're presenting on the screen. So there's kind of a tectonic change now happening as a result of this new content recognition capability of at least the Vizio TVs. And we approached them saying, we have this business where we help advertisers target online ads to people who've been exposed to TV commercials. Can we leverage or partner with you to license this data so that we can actually do household granular targeting of this to kind of leapfrog our competitors and to bring into the market something that's much more sophisticated and much more in tune with what the agencies want? And they said, yeah. So we've been working with them since April, delivering campaigns into the US market. But even since April, it's now August, almost mm-hmm. September, we've already learned that there's a whole slew of other applications that we can actually tap into that leverage this data. And so we're seeing a situation where 50 years of TVs being dumb, now one manufacturer's got really smart TVs in the sense that they know what they're displaying. And here, and now the company's actually going out and doing licensing deals for the tech with other manufacturers who we can't mention. So we can see a situation where we're going to be able to access data from more and more TVs.
Right.
I do need to emphasize at this stage that it's all anonymous.
Yeah.
We don't know who you are or where you are. Target people based on anonymous identifiers.
Yeah, and from an ecosystem perspective, that totally changes the game, yeah. Because now you've got a distribution of your own product essentially across by partnership. Because
yeah.
I mean, when we spoke back then, a lot of people didn't understand what you're doing, or they understood that initial product, but they didn't understand how to scale it.
Yeah.
And you guys have just managed through, you know, and. You know, you talk about being lucky, but you brought yourself to the table. You were at the table because you had the product. So luck doesn't really exist. You yeah. did a lot of hard work and, you know, you rolled the dice for yourselves.
Yeah.
And that's totally changed the game. But it must be frustrating in the early days of this, where you've brought this technology to some companies and they don't know really what you're talking about, because they're probably dealing with the business today as opposed to seeing what it can be tomorrow.
Yeah, that can be frustrating. It's definitely a an issue when you're trying to get off the ground as a startup. Most startups have very limited runway and very limited resources, so they have to bring in revenues quickly. Peter?
Yeah, there's a sort of inaction, and maybe I can say this because I'm not Irish, but in Ireland it might be even worse, but people feel that they're kind of hanging on to their existing business, and they are afraid to adjust or adopt new thinking, and that's probably what prompted that pivot on our part, that we just wanted to go and do it elsewhere.
Yeah, and because it's, we see this all the time with innovation, that people are dealing with the business as it is today,
yeah.
And sometimes you just don't have the right people for the business tomorrow, and people are hanging on to that, and they're kind of going, I don't really want to change because that exposes my lack of knowledge, instead of absolutely jumping and embracing it. And yeah, that needs to come from the top of companies, and yeah, needs to be bred into the companies that you need to investigate this, you need to get in early.
There's actually another aspect to it, and that is particularly in Ireland is problematic, is that it's really hard to get to a no in Ireland. If you're in the Netherlands or in Germany and you present what you have, somebody will go, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
And here it's that's great. Yeah, come back next month.
Yeah.
And then you come back the next month, and it's come back in 2 months. Yeah. So it's just really hard to get to a no. I mean, yeah, a no is often even better than a yes,
yeah,
because it means you can move on.
And a no with some feedback as to why is
preferably
better.
Yeah.
But like, what you want is a Tinder. You want to just be swiped one way or the other. startup Tinder, that's a great idea. Pitch Tinder.
Innovation dating, yeah.
Yeah. So what's next?
Scaling. So we've found ourselves in the lucky position of being primed for what's becoming a new media product, essentially, and being primed in the leading media market in the world. So there's an opportunity on the table there in front of us. We only have two competitors. We need just to scale into the market and grow with our partners as well. So the next year is all about the US. That being said, we know that some of this capability of smart TV being really smart recognition is coming online in Europe as well. And we're already being asked, because we're Europeans, that's the way we pitch it anyway, we're already being asked, you know, how can we take their products to market here? You know, what kind of revenues can we garner from the European markets? And realistically, the American companies are saying, well, let's start off with the UK and Germany and France. You know, we know they have some decent scale and they're sophisticated enough in terms of their marketing and advertising. And then they look at Scandinavia, which is sophisticated as well. And then they sort of back their way into the Latin countries that tend to be a few years behind the Nordics. So we're kind of looking at focusing on the US, getting the revenues up as quickly as possible, carving out our portion of the market against our competitors, and then expanding the European operation as well.
And is there an opportunity for funding then, to fund that scale, or are you okay, yeah, for the moment?
Like every startup, we're always looking for
always
funding.
Open.
That's,
okay,
just, that's just the reality of it. Okay. We did just close a funding round here in Ireland, supported by Enterprise Ireland as well. Thank you, Enterprise Ireland. But it's just not at the scale that we really need, so we're back out talking to investors. There are a few nice hot irons in the hot fire, so hopefully we'll pull in more funding pretty quickly, actually. And what we've seen ourselves, Peter and myself have actually had a bit of bad luck, yeah, on a couple of occasions where we've been in the market first, we've had the better product, and we've seen competitors pop up in other markets at bigger scale, where the VCs tend to take higher risks and raise the 5 to 10 million euros or dollars, and then just take off. And usually it's the first person out of the gate, even if they're not differentiated, they're the first one to get funded, which becomes the differentiator.
Yeah.
They have the war chest. And then when you're second, the first question the VC asks you is, okay, so your competitor has 5 to 10 million in war chest. What have you got that's different that's going to crush them? And it becomes very difficult then. So we're trying to accelerate the process this time around by already engaging with American investors. Especially ones that are familiar with marketing technology, or MarTech as the industry buzzword, okay, is happening.
So where can people get in touch for either from a funding perspective or to find the product and engage with it?
With us?
Yeah.
Oh, ronan@tvadsync.com. Yeah. But don't add it to your spam list.
And Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Peter Onk and Ronan Higgins, co-founders of TV Ad Sync, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.